Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mason Moody has supported independent tech news directly for 5 years. Be like Mason. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS. This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, March 6th, 2019. Tom Merritt is off today, but from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Salt Lake City, Utah, I am Scott Johnson.
And from a very wet L.A. County area, I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Yes, it is wet here. I don't know if it's been raining in Salt Lake City as much as it has in Los Angeles, Scott, but I feel like we're in bizarro world.
Well, it's normally snow, but because March is here, we start to get really uneven with that. Like, February is the worst month, and right now it is a lot of rain. So whatever rain you have will probably end up here, and then we'll send it to Colorado. They'll get snow. And then it just gets worse from there. So thanks a lot, Los Angeles. You've done us a great service.
Yeah. We are sorry in advance. What we're not sorry for, though, is a great tech news show coming up. And let's start with a few tech things you should know.
All right. Well, let's get right to it. Reuters reports that Banxico, the Central Bank of Mexico, that's right, Banxico, always drives me
kinda
a little
cool.
Nuts. Is working with Amazon on a new government-backed payment system. The system will be called CODI, or C-O-D-I, and allow users to make in-person and online payments via QR codes. More than half the population doesn't have a bank account, and only 3.9% of retail sales were made online in 2018 in that country.
Incentivizing more bank accounts. Uber will not face criminal charges for a fatal crash involving one of its self-driving cars. Prosecutors have ruled that the company is not criminally liable for the death of Elaine Hertzberg, who she was 49, who was struck as she crossed a road in Tempe, Arizona.
Also, according to the internal Apple document obtained by Mac Rumors, they always end up with these. Someone's got friends on the inside over there. Anyway... The company will now allow devices with batteries installed by third parties to be eligible for Genius Bar and other authorized repairs. Previous Apple guidelines called for denying service to devices with third-party batteries, regardless of those circumstances. I think that's actually kind of a big deal. A lot of people do go get the third-party cheaper thing, and the fact that they can now go into Apple and get a better one
and
the right one.
And not be turned away, for saving a few bucks.
Sure. I think that's great.
It's goodwill. There's probably some other reasons there too. All right, let's talk a little bit more about the foldable phones that will not die.
Guess
Scott.
What, everybody? It's 2019. Everybody has a freaking foldable phone these days, or they don't have a phone yet, but everybody wants you to have one. Bloomberg's Sam Kim reports that Samsung is working on two new foldable phones. So if you thought that one they just released wasn't enough, this is according to sources within the company. The company plans to roll out a vertical clamshell foldable by late 2019 or early 2020. That would be my bet. Possibly with a second screen on the outside of the device when it is folded. Which kind of ruins the idea of folding it. But anyway, an outward folding device similar to Huawei's Mate X design, which we have had a look at, would follow. The company will reportedly include an in-screen fingerprint reader and is still working on improving the durability of the foldable panels. I'd said this last week, and I would reiterate it again. These things need some iteration before I'm going to trust them, and it's nothing about Samsung or anybody else making a foldable phone. It's that fold I'm concerned about. And with a lot of use, I just can't see that holding up yet. So it's the second and third generation of these that I'm most interested in. And it sounds like we may get some of that before the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's starting to feel like Groundhog Day when I see these stories, because I'm like, wait a second, didn't we just talk about Samsung's foldable phone? Oh, these are more foldable phones that are being worked on that might have different form factors. And yeah, I tend to sort of laugh about the whole thing because it's all still so conceptual. Because you or I or Roger or Tom or anybody, we haven't had a year to be like, oh, here's why it was really great. Here's why it changed the way that I did things. Here's what didn't work. You mentioned having a display on the outside of a folded device. Like, does that really, you know, is that a form factor that you're going to figure out later on is really helpful, even though it seems perhaps silly now?
Well, and that's the other issue, especially given the price. Nobody knows what the killer application is for this, if there is one. And so they can show me all the neat little videos of a game that's vertical suddenly getting larger right in the middle of the game. That's great. But that's going to last me 3 or 4 seconds of I'm impressed before I need to know what this is really going to do for me down the road. I have high hopes for this, but not at $1,500. So I hope they quickly get smaller, flatter, more durable, and cheaper.
I want the clamshell design to actually look like a clamshell.
Oh, that'd be nice.
That's what I want. Yeah. That's what I want in my foldable phone. Let's make them stylish again, people. At the 2019 TensorFlow Dev Summit today, Google announced a bunch of TensorFlow stuff. A new open source TensorFlow privacy module was kind of the big one for its machine learning framework. Developers can now add just a few lines of code and improve the privacy of their AI models. TensorFlow is a very popular developer tool. I think it turned about 3 years old back in November. Millions of folks are in there developing, or it has been installed certainly millions of times, for building machine learning applications to create programs like text or audio or image recognition algorithms. Google's TensorFlow privacy will add what they call differential privacy to help safeguard users' data, which is a kind of complex, at least to me, mathematical approach that means that AI models trained on user data can't encode personally identifiable information because that gets dangerous. Google already uses it for a number of its own AI features like Gmail's Smart Reply. Aha, got it. Google also debuted TensorFlow Federated, or TFF, which is supposed to make it easier to experiment with machine learning and other computations on decentralized data. And the company also announced the TensorFlow 2.0 Alpha, or gave some hints of what was coming, with a glimpse of upcoming changes aimed at making machine learning easier for beginners. Mm. That would be me.
Well, that's going to be the next big step, I think, is them codifying these concepts in such a way that people can use them in more common circumstances. So having a class in a high school that's focused on, traditional computer science would love probably to have an entire course on machine learning and what that is. If they can make that easy and accessible for that environment, that's a good thing for not only education now, but the future of the technology and where it goes and interest in it and that sort of thing. But moreover, it will be tricky to find all the practical applications for this without easy tools and simple methods to try to implement it and to experiment and to mess around. And I'm glad you brought up the Gmail integration, because there's a good example of a regular thing we use all the time. Gmail is constantly telling me what I want to reply with, and I sort of have to make a decision if I want to do that or not. Sometimes it's not great, but it's a start, and I think that's really good. This is an important step, I guess I should say, because outside of this, it's very abstract and complicated, and nobody's got their finger exactly on what the future of AI and machine learning is. So I think this is a good thing that Google's doing, and I hope that others in this field follow.
Agreed.
Google is testing, speaking of Google, ads. That's right. They still make a lot of money from ads, everybody. They want to do shoppable ads on Google image searches. The search giant will place related sponsored ads within image search results. The ads will feature a price tag, little icon on the lower right of the image. A user can then hover over the image and see what item is for sale in the image along with the price. Currently, the test is a small percentage of traffic with select retailers is all they're going to start with. Surfacing on brand queries like home office ideas, shower tile designs, and abstract art. Here's how I foresee this is a possibility for people like me. If you're a independent artist and creator and you're putting work out there, a lot of times what happens, especially if your stuff memes out a little bit, people start spreading it around, they take your name off it, gets cropped for whatever reason, sites will post it without your permission. They end up getting filtered back into the image search on Google. And I'll sometimes run into my own work and go, oh my gosh, there's that print I made. My name's nowhere on that, and no one has any idea that it's mine, but people are using it for their blogs and their whatever. It'd be kind of cool if when those results came up, one of the cool things you could do with an in-image ad would be purchase a 12 by 18 inch version of this print, for example. Mm-hmm. And suddenly artists are getting attribution. There's probably a long distance between what I'm saying and what's actually possible, even with this test. But I would like to see it be more than just, oh, you're searching for stuff in the home office. How'd you feel about a new fax machine? That's great and all. But I love the idea of more attribution, people getting credit, and then maybe even getting, you know, some money for that.
Yeah. When I first read the story, I was like, oh, man, don't screw up my Google image searches. They're the wild west of image searches, and that's how I like them. However, that's also a reason that if I am searching for a new lamp, let's say, something that it could be purchased somewhere, I'm not doing that within Google. I might be at Amazon, but I might be at Pinterest. I frequent House, H-O-U-Z-Z, all the time for home stuff that I usually can't afford. But they have a very nice integrated way that you can click into some images, not all of them, to be able to figure out where the retailer is, where you could buy this particular item. So if there was more of that in Google image search, I would use it for that reason more. Because most of the time, that's not what I would use image search for. Although, Roger, you did mention that is actually something that could be helpful when you're looking for something that's a home improvement project, for example, and you actually want to make sure you've got the image right.
So, you know what I was thinking, like, for one of the things that I often do an image search for is a part, or if I see instructions on how to do, like, hey, to fix your door hinge, you're going to need blah, 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 and this tool, oftentimes they won't include an image. I'll do an image search for whatever tool, and you get, like, this is what the tool is. It could very well be as something where it's like a Home Depot or Lowe's, you know, integrated ad where, like, oh, you can buy this, you know, torque wrench for $50 at this store, or you can buy it off Amazon. The only problem and the only fear I have is some of these ads start displacing actual legitimate image search results. So they're not at the top, but rather all the way at the bottom. And then you're just constantly scrolling through.
Yeah.
Right.
That's definitely an image. That's an issue for me as well, but it also is maybe not a bigger, well, maybe a bigger issue for me is I use Google image searches for references. Like, I need to quickly go, I need somebody doing a backflip. I need an image reference to draw this. Oh, okay, there's a guy doing it, and I'll use it for a minute, and then it'll go away. I may have a weird use case, and maybe Google's never really known what to do with image search, and they're finally finding a way to use it. So I may have to change my way of thinking about what image search is actually for, but I'd be at least curious to see where this goes.
Well, in Alphabet news anyway, Waymo announced a Medium post. He didn't announce a Medium post. Those already exist. Waymo will start selling its LiDAR sensors to companies outside of the self-driving automobile market with an initial focus on security, robotics, and agriculture. The money earned from sales would help the company lower the unit price of the sensors through economies of scale. Although the company has developed several models of LiDAR, it would only be selling the laser bear honeycomb version. It's a short-range sensor with a 95-degree vertical field of view and a 360-degree horizontal field of view, a minimum range of zero, meaning that it can see things right in front of it, and features multiple returns per pulse. Interested parties should visit the Waymo website.
I, as I said earlier off-air, think this is really cool because everybody always wants to focus on what's the end game for automated cars and stuff like that and driving. And we always think it's going to be some company like Tesla or somebody who invests millions in these top to bottom solutions. It's a car. It takes you everywhere. You never drive it. That's the ultimate goal. And I get it. And that's great. And there's a bunch of companies working on that. But what I've seen very little of is companies working on smaller, more modular plug-in solutions. And I don't mean that this solution is going to make my car drive itself. Obviously not. But it is a piece of that and perhaps a stepping stone toward the car itself being a much smarter, quote-unquote, ecosystem or device. And I could see a future where things are much more modular. There's a lot of safety questions in that, and we haven't answered those yet. And we're not going to be able to today, obviously. But I like the idea that the choices may not be I'm getting this brand car. It might be I'm getting their chassis, their engine, and their navigation system, and kind of building your own, you know, your own kind of setup, or at the very least having more control over what you've got if you own these self-driving cars. If it's more of a fleet situation, if none of us are even owning cars in 50 years, well, then we can have a different conversation about it. But I like this modular idea a lot.
What's interesting is, in many ways, it's kind of how cars are built with all the extra features that you get today. For example, the whole radar brake assist, like, oh, you know, the car will automatically brake for you if you get too close to the car in front of you if you buy this option. It's one of those things that was developed by a company and then just sold to Ford, BMW, or whatever, and they would develop or they would license the technology so the company could then build its own version that integrate with their automobile. I think you're right. I don't think the future will be a Tesla. A Tesla will definitely be part of the future, but I don't think it will be the future. It's going to be a technology from a company. For example, I forgot his name, but there's one individual who developed the intermittent wiper that everyone has on their car, right? Mm-hmm. It's a wiper mode that intermittently does it every 2 seconds or every 4 seconds or whatever. He developed the original circuit for that, and a bunch of cars supposedly ripped them off and car companies ripped off and developed it. But the idea is that one company, one guy developed it, and then that technology kind of spread across the industry. And I think that's kind of what you're seeing. I think you're going to see the same thing with electric vehicles, where it's going to be the one company that develops the really amazing storage technology that allows you to, you know, cram 100 plus miles into an average size sedan on electric power. And then, you know, they're going to license it and everyone's going to license it and put it in their automobile. And that's where you get the economies of scale, where you can have literally not just thousands, but hundreds of thousands of automobiles. And with the sensor, what they plan to do is essentially just, you know, get it to the point where they can sell it at a much cheaper cost because they're selling it to everyone.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think I agree with that. I think that's, I mean, why wouldn't it follow that path? That's how most products end up in our hands, is this kind of iterative, added on to, licensed out, broken apart, rethought sort of process. Nobody's going to arrive at my house with a package with a bow on it that says, here's your self-driving car with every piece of functionality we could ever want. Congratulations. It doesn't work that way. And whether it's something like we talked about earlier with foldable phones, or it's, you know, getting much closer to automated driving, it's going to take a bunch of iteration, mistakes, failures, and hopefully a few successes before we get it.
Well, Laser Bear Honeycomb is a cool name, that's for sure. Hey, to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. In fact, you'll hear my voice on the headline show tomorrow. All right, so this is our discussion for the day, and it's all about good and bad companies, or at least how they're perceived by people in the U.S. Axios wrote up, it was actually a poll between Harris Poll and Axios in conjunction with each other of U.S. adults. Facebook sort of fall from grace was the big headline, but the way that the Axios Harris Poll works is that it ranks the reputations of the most visible companies in the U.S. So the survey is conducted among almost 20,000 Americans. It's a two-step process. First, it surveys the public's top-of-mind awareness of companies who are seen of some range of good or bad in society or somewhere in between. Then these most visible companies are then ranked by a second group of Americans to figure out their actual ranking, one being the best and 100 being the worst. If a company isn't on the list, then it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a good or bad company. It just means that it did not have a critical enough level of visibility to be measured in this poll. So of those companies, they weren't all tech companies, but a lot of them were. And again, like I mentioned, Facebook got a lot of attention, but there are some very interesting data points in here. For example, Amazon held the number two spot of companies kind of doing the best as far as the public perceived them. Wegmans was number one, grocery chain. Samsung was at number seven, Microsoft at number nine. There's also fastest rising and falling reputation areas. This isn't for 2019. Samsung climbed from number 35 to number seven.
That's great. So, yeah.
Samsung's had a good year since we did this last. Netflix and Apple both saw small declines, but they're kind of hovering in the 20s. Facebook, though, fell from number 51 to number 94, which is a very large drop for any company. Now, of course, Facebook is Facebook and has had quite a bit of issues, certainly in the public eye. It's a long laundry list of issues that folks have, whether it's, you know, distrust or, you know, are you swinging elections and what are you doing with our data? And we've talked about that ad nauseum, but even so, it's a very steep decline. Tesla, by the way, also fell from number 3, which is pretty high, to number 42. So it's interesting the way that these social shifts happen quite quickly and sometimes quite dramatically.
Well, same thing with Tesla, right? Like, they've had similar scrutiny, not the same scrutiny as Facebook. It's a different market, obviously, but Elon Musk likes to say a bunch of wacky stuff online. It affects stock prices. Things get weird with public companies. He complains about that. You could see that starting to erode into people's perception of what Tesla was before all of that, which was this amazing, pristine product that only a genius could come up. You know, like, they had that whole shroud, and this is that shroud being pulled away a little bit. The Facebook one, I feel like, has been brewing for years and, you know, has been a little bit strange. But I would actually like to remark that Samsung's climb from 35 to 7 is pretty remarkable, considering the Note 7 nightmare that they went through, and seemingly, at least according to this data, have come out okay. And that really surprised me.
Or at least it just took some time, right, to like gain the trust back of, mm-hmm. of at least these people pulled in the U.S.
Well, I think it does underscore the fact that memories can be short, especially when there are a lot of other companies that can fall on their face just as rapidly as you do. One example is Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft, for those who might not be familiar with the company, was the subject of a lot of scorn and on public anger back in the early 2000s, all the way up into the late 2000s. And in the Harris poll that they did in 2011, Microsoft polled in at 16. Mm. Now, 9, going up to 9 now, I mean, it's not a huge jump, but it's still a significant shift for the company. And a lot of that has to do with the way the company is now perceived, especially with the way the company's been captained by Satya Nadella. And kind of the shifts in the way the company does its business away from a OS-centric, our way or the highway kind of attitude versus more of a collaborative. And they still might be, you know, the most obnoxious bean counters on the planet that want to nickel and dime you for everything you have. But the public face that they give is definitely more palatable than it was than 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it does also, it's just a nice little reminder that public perception, especially in companies who deal with public-facing products, Facebook is the perfect example of this, but I would throw Twitter in there and others, mm-hmm. they are always just one controversy away from dropping 50 spots on this list. Like, you know, right. It takes, in Facebook's case, I almost said fake book, that's not good. In their face,
you wouldn't be the first person.
Freudian slip.
Tripped on that one. I'll just let that lay over there on the floor. I tripped on it. but the scrutiny they've had is on such a higher level. Like, they've been in front of Congress. They've been in front of EU Parliament. They've had to lay bare all of their practices. And in the cases where they forgot about something, either innocently or not, then they're getting after, you know, being got after again because they forgot to disclose a thing. Like, their mm-hmm. level of scrutiny is magnifying lens on an anthill when I was 5. It was all about just killing as many ants as I could. And I feel like Facebook's not going to do – they're not going to go up on this list very quickly. So there may be a weird example. But I think any of these companies could, at any given time, just slip up, slip down.
And also, you might look at this and say, well, Amazon's doing great. Number 2 behind a beloved grocery chain. Okay, well – Are you comparing Netflix and Amazon? And if so, is it original Amazon video that you would compare to Netflix? So there are so many data points in here that in these two companies, it's not sort of like Microsoft and Apple, which one's better? Mm-hmm. Because the reason that people might be happy or displeased with a company, it could be for a lot of reasons, depending on how big the company is and what they offer.
Right. And I think there's a certain level of how much competition does a company have for public opinion to really sway their business decisions, right? Facebook doesn't have an immediate, you know, competitor that does everything it does. There's companies that do bits of what it does, but not in the same scale that Facebook does. So there's a level of, you know,
it has more opportunities to screw up.
Well, some would say kind of an insufferable attitude that, well, you know what, we're still the only player in town. So people mm-hmm. are invariably going to come around to us, even if not directly. And so, you know, you see it with other companies that have, you know, for the longest time, like, you know, AT&T, when it was Ma Bell, it was like, well, you know, we dropped your call. We're sorry. But guess what? We're the phone company. We are the phone company. There are no other phone companies. If you need to use the phone, you're going to use it with us. So, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, we're upset. You know, we're sorry you're upset, but it doesn't really matter to us. It was only then when you had competition where you kind of lit a fire under their corporate behinds, where they started at least publicly tried to change their direction as well as their attitude toward the customers, not looking them like more of a, you know, just kind of a fiefdom, but more as customers that they need to keep happy.
Yeah.
You know, related to everything that we're talking about here is a story today from The Guardian that Whole Foods had cut workers' hours after Amazon, which owns Whole Foods, introduced a new minimum wage, which was $15. And in certain cases for management, it was a little bit higher. But if you were making $15 and you worked at Whole Foods, then you became a $15 minimum wage. However, workers have complained of now having fewer hours, even though the overall budget for these stores in some cases really haven't changed. And they say, well, this wipes out our raises altogether. You know, if I was working 40 hours a week and now I get more per hour and I'm only working 32 hours, this kind of it kind of screws us up. And I think that this is a perfect example of something that if that gets enough traction, people will start saying, oh, Whole Foods is bad to their employees. Whole Foods is a bad company. You know, and will that dock Amazon when we look at this poll next year?
Yeah, I think that's very possible. Like they, on the one hand, well, whether it's true or not, the perception will be Amazon swooped in, created a minimum wage that is a living wage, and that's good, and that seems like a good company practice, but then sneakily, you know, reduced everybody's hours, nullifying the good. Whether or not that's actually true, it may not matter in cases like this, because we're really just talking about perception. Mm-hmm. I noticed that Chick-fil-A was number 4 last year. Number 22 this year. That's still pretty good chicken. I don't know what's going on over there, but that chicken is good.
It's because they closed their local branch near me. And people were mad.
Oh, all right.
I wish I'd been pulled.
Local story.
I always wonder, why don't I get pulled on things like this? I would love to be part of a poll like this.
Yeah.
Never happens.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. It's a poll of sorts of its own. You can submit stories and vote on others at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow is where to hang out with us on Facebook. That's your bag. Speaking of bags, back to Amazon now. We got an email from Kevin who said, I just placed my first Amazon order and chose Amazon Day for delivery. It felt good for a couple of reasons. Number one, I would have likely been in the mountains skiing on Thursday on the expected 2-day delivery date. Two, I feel like in the future, I can help reduce a lot of waste when there are products with different delivery dates. I don't think I would have even noticed that this was a new option had you guys not mentioned it, because I'm usually pretty automatic with my orders. Search, add to cart, hit order, close browser. Something did occur to me, however. This will likely be saving Amazon a ton over the long haul. They should really give customers some sort of a price reduction for using this.
Yeah. Amazon doesn't seem to be in a
hurry
for that.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold my breath either. We got another email from our boss, Chip, from snowy Boston.
Hey, Chip.
Yeah, go Celtics, I guess. I was trying to think of a good team to back today. I was listening to your conversation yesterday about...
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
About the Ordeen stove and how its space-saving design would be great for small kitchens, and it hit me. I've seen this before. A few years back, I toured Kentuck Knob, a Frank Lloyd Wright house built in the early 50s. And part of the tour, we went through the house's small kitchen, which had many many space-saving innovations, including a fold-down stove. He's got some pictures he sent with this. The electric stove was a Frigidaire product from the same time period. It allowed you to fold down the four burners in one at a time, so it only took up as much space as you needed on the counter. The benefit, this 60-plus-year-old product had over the Ordeen was the burners were detachable, so you could take one or more with you to the dining room or outside to keep food warm. That's kind of rad. Obviously, the Ordeen is much more... Is it Ordeen or Ordeen? I hope I'm saying it right. Or we'll say Ordeen. Obviously, the Ordeen is
Ordeen
much...
We said Ordeen on Monday.
Oh, okay, yeah. Cool. Much more modern tech, but the space-saving concept is the same. I always wondered why the design never caught on. Hopefully now, with the advent of injunction cooktops, it may... Love the show. Keep up the great work. Your boss, Chip, from snowy Boston.
Yeah, Chip, I loved those photos you sent, Chip. They're so cool. Wherever that house is, I would like a tour as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so thanks to Kevin. Thanks, Chip. Thanks to everybody who sends us feedback. We love you. Keep it coming. Also, thanks to Scott Johnson for helping Roger and I hold down the fort today. Scott, what else is going on in your world?
Well, it's been my pleasure. Hope Tom's having a safe trip. And I would just say, if you are interested in anything I have going on these days, there are two places to go, really. The first is frogpants.com. Everything I do is there. If you're looking for art, if you're looking for our store, if you're looking for podcasts, it's all right there. And to follow me on the daily, you can see me at Twitter on Twitter at Scott Johnson.
That'd be a great handle. Yeah, you could just add me at Twitter. That's me. Well, thanks for being with us, Scott. Our goal each month, as you know, patrons, is to get one more patron than we had last month. You could be that person. Maybe you're on the fence. Maybe it's time to check out our Patreon and see what all the great perks we have there. You can become a DTNS member and get an ad-free RSS feed. Also special episodes from Tom on how we make the sausage. Special episodes looking back on tech news of the past and lots more. You can sign up at patreon.com/DTNS. We also have a store. Want to mention that too. dailytechnewsshow.com/store. Our email address, as I mentioned, feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. Tom's back from Austin, Texas tomorrow. We'll also have Justin Robert Young and David Sparks. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.